We see algorithmic trading across most markets, equities, bonds, currencies, but we really aren't seeing it in the world of steel, one of the oldest industries in America. Bloomberg's metals reporter Joe Doe and energy reporter Catherine Nye join me here in New York to discuss the complexities of trading steel. Nice to have you both here, Joe. Let me start with you. So why aren't we really seeing algorithmic trading within this steel market?
Traditionally, steel has been a very disjointed market. It's very regional, and this is largely because of sheer volume, right? If you think of the amount of steel that's produced in the world, the U.S. produces about 100 million tons of steel per year, whereas like aluminum, they produce about 850,000 tons. So the sheer volume means that people are really based on regional and domestic pricing. And so it's very difficult to get a broader kind of globally traded market price in the way that you have for other metals or other commodities like oil.
So, Catherine, now would you say the lack of algo trading within this market is a positive?
Well, it really depends on who you're talking to. If you are talking about producers, then probably yes, producers are price setters in this industry. They get to call the shot. So having algorithmic trading coming in and changing up prices, that's probably not a good for them. But for consumers, probably they want algorithmic trading because they want to see prices more stabilized, and therefore they have sort of an idea and a future expectation of how prices should trend.
That makes sense. So it seems like managing price risk and the lack of liquidity are the biggest factors that pose issues for algo trading. Now, for a liquid contract to work, many say it's important to have a delivery point, like oil has a delivery point. What's it like for steel?
Right. I mean, you basically buy the steel from the mill and they have it directly shipped to you. And you try to also get the steel very close to wherever it is that your factory is located. So the further you have to go, the more you have to pay in terms of shipping prices, like your FedEx price, which is like a premium. And so the whole idea behind it is you wanted to get it as close to possible being produced off the line to where you're making your stuff.
And just to follow up on that, I think that we see in the oil market that all oil is usually delivered to a very important centralized trading hub where oil then gets priced. So, for example, Cushing is where WTI gets priced, and we know that has become sort of the U.S. benchmark. And so, you know, it's amazing to see that still in the oil industry, still in the steel industry, you see a lot of delivery points that are just really the parts of the Midwest that don't have the sort of centralized hub or a warehouse or, you know, storage tanks that oil or many other commodities have.
So will we see a centralized hub in the future then? Will we see a delivery point?
I mean, listen, we have talked to a number of people who do believe that at some point some sort of financialization is going to have to occur that is going to rely on the people who are the buyers in this space, because you can't rely on the producers. The producers probably like it how it is. They set prices and customers have to figure out how to say yes or no to that. But we are seeing a move. It's slow, but it's certainly not going backwards.
And then just sort of going off that, you know, as you both have been investigating the steel market and this industry and, you know, speaking to different market participants and traders, what sort of changes do traders want to see within the steel market?
Well, when we were reporting this out, I think that, you know, following what Joe had just said, it's important to understand that for a futures market and for a liquid futures market to exist, you do need people on both sides. So consumers might, you know, lead the push, but you really do need to have producers on board. And so to have a producer, a steel mill, on board with this gives it legitimacy. And so for one, we need to have legitimacy for the underlying players before you have a financialized market. So that's really important. But also understanding which product to trade. There's, you know, in steel, many people don't like to call it a commodity because they like to tout the quality of the steel, the things that they produce. So we really need to understand, are we going to be trading steel scrap? Is it going to be, you know, a hot rolled coil, which is the first thing that comes off the mill? Is it going to be some sort of upgraded product? And before we really have a certain sort of liquid financial market, we need to first agree on what product should be the benchmark for this industry.
So do you see most people coming together then and agreeing?
I think that's yet to be figured out. I mean, just like anything else with these markets, change is not always quickly accepted. We're certainly seeing a move in that direction.
Yeah, for sure.
Joe, Catherine, thanks very much for joining me. This is one of the topics we're watching in commodities for the week ahead. In New York, I'm Jessica Summers.